Okay, I'm going to try to cover from 1994 to 2015 in 20 minutes, so catch your breath. I decided that we've excavated 112 trenches, and I'm not going to go through each one. We'd be here till tomorrow. So what I'm going to do is approach it from a functional way. So I've divided the site into 9 different functions. Based on architectural remains, artifactual remains, and ecofactual remains. And you all know where it's located. It's about 825 kilometers south-southeast of Suez, and it's easy to find on the map because it's immediately south of Ras Banas, Cape Banas, right here. So, and of course, it served different functions. It was founded by Ptolemy II. In the 3rd century, and it served as mainly a governmental port, importing war elephants and materials for the government, and by Roman times it was more of a commercial civilian activity, and certainly the government was making money from this, but it was more civilian goods coming through. So this is an overall map, and it's awfully small, I realize, but the areas, those little dots in green are our trenches. And I'm going to go through, as I said, functionally and highlighting in colored circles what I'm going to be talking about. So I want to look at hydraulic installations first. And we do have some from the Ptolemaic period. This is our most recent exciting find just this past season. We have 5 tunnels, and you can see them here, one of which, this one here, is actually hydraulic. We're not sure about the others because they're not completely excavated. And then one that we dug earlier in the 90s, the red arrow points to the remains of a cistern, which you'll see later on was reused as a cemetery. And then for the Roman hydraulic installations, the actual remains, we have very little. The area in green, again, the same general area where we saw the Ptolemaic ones. So this is what we have. It's not much as a cistern here. And then these little things here are the amphoras that form some kind of a pipe. But we do have a lot, of course, of other evidence for hydraulic activities, and some of them are these ostraca we found in 2009 and 10 that deal specifically with the Roman army's control of the water supply in the city, and maybe Rodney's going to be talking more about that later. And then, of course, around the city, the fresh water would have had to come from the desert, not from the port. And we had 10 forts that protected access to the city, and 3 of them most likely provided water. So we're looking at the closest one here at Sakhet, little fort here. You can see the truck for scale. We dug one trench, and we found this massive inscription in one 4x4-meter trench, a 2.7-meter-wide inscription in Latin. There are parallels, of course, for this along the road to Koptos. This is how it would have fit into the fort. And it's very specific. It is a hadrioma. It most likely did, of course, provide drinking water to the city. Then we have 2 other forts nearby in Wadi Khalilat, a large Praesidium and a smaller one that undoubtedly also provided drinking water to the city. This is a satellite image of the large Praesidium in Wadi Khalilat. We did do excavations here and survey work. You can see remains of the front gate. The hadrioma itself is huge. It's 30 meters in diameter and impossible to clear. It's filled with sand. We found 35 fragments of a Trajanic period inscription. I'm only showing you 3 fragments here. There's no mention of a hadrioma in the inscription, but undoubtedly, if we had the whole text, we might find something like that. Here's some other views of the large Praesidium, the wall. This is a back gate that was blocked, and remains of the large hadrioma in the center. Then there's a smaller installation in Wadi Khalilat. It's less than a kilometer away here, which was probably also another source of drinking water for the city. There are some views of it. And we did do some excavations in the gate, but we found no inscription, unfortunately. Now, let's take a look at military installations. Sometimes these are tied with the hydraulics. So the areas that you see circled in sort of light blue are Ptolemaic military installations. I'm actually, my colleague, Marek, is here. He actually dug all of these. He should be the one talking about them, but here we are. So this is a geomagnetic plan of the city, and we have a layout here of what we think was part of the Ptolemaic military structure. It was walled in the Ptolemaic period. We didn't know this before. So this is new. Unfortunately, badly robbed. At the top, you see the remains of a tower. We had a nicely dated stamped amphora handle here. And below, you see a part of a wall that was robbed out in the Augustan period. So clearly in early Roman times, the Romans didn't find a need for a city wall anymore. And then this is recent work that's been found. This is that same trench with the hydraulic tunnels that I showed you a moment ago. And we have the remains of part of the wall here as well. Now, evidence for Roman military activity, we have actually no structures, but we do have a lot of material from the trash. Again, the same water ostraca I showed you. I mentioned the military, so we know they're here in a big way. In the Julio-Claudian and Flavian periods, I'm speculating that these little objects might have been the personal baggage of soldiers that were stationed at Berenike in the early Roman period. This material comes pretty much from the early Roman trash dump. And again, of course, the same Praesidia that I mentioned in connection with the water, these would be, of course, obviously military in nature, along with the other forts. There's, as I said, there are 10 forts protecting access to the city. We do have a very interesting shrine we found in the 90s. We call it the Shrine of the Palmyrenes. It's located on the Red Arrow up there. And it was, in fact, a shrine that had two inscriptions, both of which mention Palmyrenes. One was associated with this bronze statue here. And the arm, this arm with a cornucopia does belong to the statue. We had about 100 wooden bowls with the remains of burned offerings. This text, which was published some years ago in Greek, mentions a Palmyrene archer named Marcus Aurelius Mokymos. It's precisely dated to 8 September 215, and it mentions a dedication to the Roman imperial cult. And then we had a second text, bilingual in Palmyrene and Greek, again mentioning some military officers, a dedication to the Palmyrene god, or dedication of a statue of the Palmyrene god Hierobol. So those are where his feet would have been, and that's all that's left of him is this bronze hand. We found other evidence as well. We found a little head of Harpocrates. We found this reclining sphinx recycled, and we found a number of stone altars and bowls. So it was clearly a very active shrine, several different cults involving, at least at some point, the Roman army. Ptolemaic religious and funerary, we have absolutely no funerary that we can solidly date to Ptolemaic. We do have a scattering of religious. It's not much. These drawings of a bronze temple, miniature bronze temple doors, and these scarabs are about all we can scrape up for religion at Berenike in the Ptolemaic period. Now, in the Roman period, we have a lot of data, as you can see from all the little purple circles. So let's go into the harbor first. The red arrow indicates a very strange structure that we have never been able to really figure out. You can see it's basically a square surrounded by either pavement or tumbled walls. We're not sure of the date of this. This is what it looks like in its earliest phase. You can see the floor is paved with coral heads. And the later, and there's some other views of the early phase. It looks very similar in construction to the Great Temple that I'll be telling you a little bit about later, and that Martin will be talking about to a greater extent. The style of the architecture, the way it's put together, I think the two buildings are associated. This is a later phase when early to late Roman material, 1st to 4th century, was thrown in here. It includes peppercorns, painted ostrich eggshells, fired bricks, and this statue, which is indicated here. This is this, not statue, but base, altar, mentioning Domitian. And then, as I said, I think there's a connection, certainly, I'm not sure functionally, but certainly date-wise, between that building and the Great Temple, which used to be called the Serapis Temple. We decided to clear it, even though earlier Europeans had done work here. We decided to clear it and try to make a better record of it. And we found this little guy, this little horse-headed crocodile. These are the two trenches we dug in January 2015. And you can see their location just inside and just outside the entrance to the temple. Lots of heavy fallen roof beams, wood, The wood is mainly cedar. It may be recycled from ships. It could have served as niches or possibly parts of walls. Here's some other parts of that. And most amazingly, and this is what really surprised us, finding two fragments of stelae from the Middle Kingdom period. If this is actual evidence of activity at Berenike in the Middle Kingdom, that pushes the date back by 1,500 years. And we're speculating now that it might have been an intermediate port to Punt from the ones coming from Wadi Gawasis. But of course, we want to get back there and dig some more to find out more about this. This, I just had a conversation with someone at lunch, and she would like to put this in the Ptolemaic period, which is fine with me. And we're actually going to probably let her play with this a little bit. So we found this in the trench. We found some major inscriptions that are too big to move. This one dedicated in the reign of Claudius to the greatest nurse goddess Isis. This other one from the Trajanic period, dedicated by a secretary of an aromatics warehouse to a prominent citizen in Berenike, probably with a statue that's now lost. And here's another little dedicatory plaque. We found many other inscriptions and fragments that I really don't have time to show you. In addition to part of the ceiling, the stars were probably, of course, inlaid with glass or painted. Parts of the decoration of the temple included marble revetment, and you can see the decoration of two sides of one of the doors here. So it was a very, very rich building, and as I said, you'll hear more about that. The Shrine of the Palmyrenes, we just looked at that, and I'll just leave it in there as a religious thing, so we have a /military religious structure. The late Roman Harbor Temple, this is a fascinating building, and I'm sorry we don't have a separate lecture on it, but it's right next door to the sunken area, and in fact makes use of some of the walls of the sunken area. It goes through two major phases in the later 4th and 5th centuries. It has some earlier phases that may or may not be religious and some later ones. So here are some of the finds, including this little Bes figurine made of faience, and these two little bronze critters. And the one on the right is especially interesting. The closest parallels for the bull's head actually come from South Arabia, from the 2nd centuries BC to the 2nd century AD. And then we have this Trajanic inscription of his first year, 98, that we found recycled here. And a whole host of other objects that I really don't have time to talk about. But notice the little green arrow, that little jar in the corner was filled with these little silver repoussé decorative pieces that were nailed either probably to a door or to a box or possibly to the prow of a ship. We simply don't know. And then this interesting little patera here that you see with the bronze tripod legs still intact. There it is here. A number of altars. This is a very, very rich building, and it's almost unique in Egypt in that the contents were there. A lot of botanical remains as well that I can't really go into. Here's some of the others, the painted ostrich eggshell fragments, which seem to be magical incantations, the incense burner, a number of these temple pools that are very typical of Meroe and Nubia, and we find them throughout the religious structures at Berenike. The stars are probably representations of the dog star Sirius and are associated, of course, with Isis. The northern shrine is very similar in appearance and date to the late Roman Harbor Temple. Here's the earlier phase. The red arrow, you can see this relief has been recycled there. And here's the later phase. All the timber in here is teak, recycled teak, probably from dismantled ships. And again, the same kinds of temple pools that we saw from the late Roman Harbor Temple. We do have a church, and it's one of the largest religious buildings on the site. You can see its location at the east here, dates to the 5th century. Its orientation and, more importantly, its contents tell us that it is a church, a number of crosses and starograms and Coptic inscriptions and so on and so forth. Okay, evidence for funerary. We have a fair amount of evidence for funerary remains, human remains, at Berenike. Circled there you see in sort of yellow. So these span from the early to the late Roman period. Just last season we found these individuals at the top left and bottom left, the same individual wearing an iron ring on his finger. And on the right, the woman, that's a woman, a very tall woman with an amphora over her head. These are clearly early Roman, and they're in the same area as the early Roman hydraulic installation I showed you earlier. Then we have the remains of this old man, and the arrows point to beads that he was wearing, some very nice ones from India, by the way, and an iron ring. Then in the 90s, in this area that we're not sure what building it is, but we're speculating it might have been a lighthouse, we found this 30 to 40-year-old man whose neck had been broken and had been deposited in here. So there he is. And then just last season, we decided to investigate an area of modern Egyptian military bunkers. And we knew there were graves up here, so we investigated these. Some were robbed, some were intact, and some of them produced some very interesting finds, such as this little intaglio of an Eros figure milking a goat. And then in 2001, and this was Ivana's trench, in fact, we excavated parts of this cemetery leading out of town with two types of graves, larger ones with adults that were in wooden sarcophagi. They had been robbed. And then smaller ones, cyst graves. We're not sure if the difference between the two is a factor of age or of ethnicity or of economic status. And we found another 640 graves, which we mapped between Berenike and those Praesidia that I was mentioning to you earlier. Now, we have a number of insecurely dated human remains in the areas that you see in green. This includes a man who was about 25. We found him underneath the early Roman trash dump. So whether he's late Ptolemaic or early Roman, we can't tell because there were no burial goods associated with him. And then in the Ptolemaic industrial area, we have a number of individuals who were deposited in the region after the industrial area had fallen out of use. So we can't be completely certain if these are early Roman, late Roman, or later than that. We don't know. Here's some more individuals. Jen Gates will remember some of these people. They were in her trench. And then finally, back to the industrial area. Again, I mentioned this as a cistern, and in the later period, we found this individual buried in there in a crouched fetal position, but the bones were so decayed we could not identify the gender. And of course, we don't know the age, except probably post-Ptolemaic. Evidence of commercial activity, again, not much in the Ptolemaic period. We have the remains of what might be a refuse pile for a brick kiln very near the Ptolemaic hydraulic installations I showed you a moment ago. An elephant retaining pin with elephant molars. Doesn't really have anything to do with what I'm talking about, but it's interesting. And then in this industrial area where we found the body, we found over 95 kilograms of lead, which clearly would have been used for pipes or fixtures or for sheathing for ships, and another wall in the Ptolemaic industrial area. So we didn't have much. We had a lot of nails and tacks, which may have been used for adhering sheathing to the ship hulls or for larger repairs. We did have a local stone sculpture, however. So there was obviously a sculpture school here in the Ptolemaic period. It continued into the Roman period, as you will see. Roman era, again, we have far more evidence of commercial industrial activity, both in early and in late Roman times. And in the late period, in a trench immediately north of the Great Temple, we have this industrial complex, which included the area where we found 7.55 kilos of peppercorns, which I think most of you are aware of. Here they are. So this is the largest single concentration of black peppercorns found anywhere in the Roman world. And in the harbor area, we found a number of industrial complexes. This one we just found this past season. It's either late Ptolemaic or early Roman. A number of crucible fragments that you see here with, obviously, copper ore still adhering to these. And then we have other industries. We have turtle shell working, including not just the finished products, but a lot of wasters from which the objects were cut, and also leather working at the site. Some finished products may have come in from outside, but we know that some of the products were being made at the site. And again, the sculptor school continued or revived in the Roman period. This little Aphrodite figurine is clearly made of local stone, so it's a local product. We have no Ptolemaic residential activity at this point. We haven't found any. They must have some, but we just haven't found it. But the Roman era residential activity is confined to the late period. We have no early Roman residential activity at this point, but the areas in blue are very active in the late Roman period, and by that I mean second half of the 4th into the 5th centuries. They're all multiple storied. They all have staircases leading to missing upper floors. The upper floors were residential. The ground floors were where they conducted their commercial activities. And as you can see, walls immediately beneath this, this is a very active part of the site. And here's another one, a lot of recycled material, recycled column capitals and so on. These are fallen roof beams. And here's a reconstruction of one of the trenches where we found a number of early Roman inscriptions, probably taken from the Great Temple to be recycled somewhere else in the city in the 4th or the 5th centuries. A lot of these buildings, in addition to staircases, had these interesting niches. And the niches were often had wooden shelving remains, and the wooden shelving was made of teak, undoubtedly, again, recycled from ships in the late period. And finally, down in the southern area of the site, where we've done very little work, we found this very interesting late Roman structure with double staircases, as you see, abutting the same wall. That's unique. We have nothing else like that at the site. Ptolemaic maritime activity. Again, not much. The same nails that I showed you earlier. And the drawing is by Martin Hentz, who will be talking after this paper. And again, we have a lot of evidence for Roman maritime activity scattered across these parts of the site. These include, on the east, a number of key walls. Okay, this is a part of a key wall, and this we have found bollards here, so this would be the seaside, that would be the land side. Somebody lost that in the area. I'm sure she was upset by the loss of that earring. And then under the church, we found the remains of this wall, which we speculate might have something to do with seaside activities. A lot of the timber that I've mentioned recycled from mainly cedar from Lebanon and teak from South Asia. A lot of it has dowel holes indicating it's been recycled from ships. We have a lot of cedar wood in and around the Great Temple. This is some of the cedar wood from those trenches in the Great Temple that I showed you earlier. We're not sure if they were parts of niches or maybe later roofing. Northern shrine, we have actually our longest single piece of teak. It's over 3 meters long, and you can see the dowel holes here, I think, very carefully. This is that same seat that I, recycling of a relief that I showed you in an earlier photograph. And if you look very carefully, you can see the dowel holes. We've left the sand there so you can see the dowel holes. So clearly in the late period, a number of ships coming in, or maybe just one, from which all this teak wood came. In the Shrine of the Palmyrenes in the late period, we also have the same kind of activities with the recycled teak wood. And in that industrial area immediately north of the Serapis Temple, we have this. So there's a lot of use of teak wood in the late period, and it seems cedar wood in the earlier periods. In the harbor area, oh, we have a lot. We have ballast. This ballast has been chemically analyzed by two different people. It comes from Kana in South Arabia. And then we have a number of ocean-going ropes. These are 5 or 6 meters in diameter. Some of them are 13 meters long. And we have also the remains of ship timbers in cedar. You can see they've been charred by fire. But we performed surgery on these. Ivana and I did, and they're, as Lucy pointed out, they are typical Mediterranean, a pinned mortise and tenon building technique. And then this ship frame that you'll recognize from her lecture that we found in 2014, also made of cedar wood and more ocean-going ropes. So we certainly hope we find more of this kind of thing. But cedar is all over the site, recycled in various manners. Again, other activities are graffito of the ship from the first century, a lifting net possibly, the sails, Indian-made sails that we've heard so much about, and the brailing rings made of animal horn or wood. We have remains, of course, of the lead sheathing, and lots of these nails, again, from another industrial area in the harbor. So these are early Roman nails. Food and water procurement, well, I've already shown you the Ptolemaic cistern. We do have a Ptolemaic trash dump that has a lot of botanical information in it, so we have a good idea of the diets of at least some of the people in Berenike in the Ptolemaic period. Lots of pork, by the way. We were very surprised. So we have pork not just in early Roman military contexts, but also in Ptolemaic. Water, well, especially food procurement and storage in the Roman period, again, the Roman trash dumps and this storage magazine in the late period, almost done. And then I've already mentioned the Ptolemaic trash, so we need to go on there, and the early and late Roman trash dumps that are sources of this data. Finally, so we have, I think, one of the most interesting things, and that's an animal necropolis. So over the past few years, we've excavated in the area of the early Roman trash dump a number of burials, several score. I don't know if it's even, might be 100 at this point, animal burials. For reasons we're not completely sure, were they pets? What were they? But they include mainly cats and kittens, dogs and puppies, but also baboons, and some of them are wearing collars, so they must have been pets, iron collars, and vervet monkeys. And if you look at the map there, that's the range of the vervet monkey today in Africa. It might have been greater in antiquity. That's what a vervet monkey looks like, if you're not certain. I wasn't. And this particular individual vervet monkey is wearing an iron collar, so he was probably somebody's pet. Okay, well, I've given you a very quick overview of what we have found over the years. There's many other things I could have talked about, but hopefully I've given you a functional overview of the major finds that we've had since 1994. So thank you very much.